Okay, folks, one last, I guess you can call this a podcast before I go. honestly, my thoughts on the season were kind of random and scattered, and after trying to put together a coherent post for about half an hour and not being at all satisfied with what I produced, I decided I'd just get a little stream of consciousness with it, and, you know, I didn't want my last audio to be me reading 50 Shades of Grey either, so here we are. But, you know, I just figured this would be a good way to kind of close out the season. I didn't really get to do a lot of football writing this year, and Paul and I didn't really get to do the RBR radio hour either, so, you know, reasons we're quitting blogging, but also just, you know, a chance to kind of throw some thoughts out there. First and foremost, though, something that I've been thinking of in the latter half of the season, our offensive identity. And, you know, we have our offense, and it's a very pro-style offense. It's something that Nick Saban is comfortable with. And, you know, for the most part, we've brought people in. Not for the most part, we have only brought people in to learn this system. And we don't really ask, you know, our offensive coordinators to do much as far as installing new schemes, but they come in, learn our system, coach the quarterbacks, and, you know, call plays and do game planning and whatnot. And, but, you know, it's worked out pretty well, I think. You know, we're certainly not a very, you know, a sexy offensive team, I suppose, but we've been very efficient and very productive, too. That's one of the things that, you know, critics that want to point to, well, Alabama's just a, you know, a defense and run the ball kind of team. But, you know, if you go back and look over the last several years, we've always been very productive on offense and been in the top half of the conference, usually near the top of the conference in scoring offense and total offense. So it's been a productive offense. But I think over this last year, we've got a little finessey, I guess you could call it. And a lot of that comes from the BCS championship game against LSU, where we really put the game plan on McCarron's shoulders. And, you know, it worked out really well, obviously, but I think that was a one-game sort of deal. You know, we knew that they were going to load up and take away the run, stop Trent Richardson, you know, who was arguably the best player on the field for both teams in that game. And, you know, there were going to be opportunities there for McCarron to be able to make plays in the passing game. And, you know, even in that game, if you looked at the way we did, you know, lining up Darius Hanks in the backfield and, you know, a lot of shifts and motions, we really were very creative with our offense in that game. But once again, you know, you bring in Nussmeier and we kind of go back to the same old, the same old, same old. Unfortunately, I felt like we got really stagnant. And I also think a big part of that, it comes from the fact that we lost Justin Fowler. It seemed like a lot of our offensive identity was kind of built into, you know, utilizing him at H-back. But once we lost him, we got very stagnant. And, I mean, for instance, we don't even run a Wildcat package anymore. The last Wildcat play that we ran was, you know, Marquise Mays throwing that interception that probably wasn't an interception the first time around against LSU. And before that, I think the other time we had run the Wildcat was Marquise Mays throwing that exact same play against Florida the year before. So it's strange to me that we kind of got to that point where we were really a finesse offense with, you know, everything being put on A.J. McCarron. Even though we had, you know, a true, you know, one of the great offensive lines that you're ever going to see, and a couple of good running backs. But once you start losing those running backs, I think we really kind of got away from, you know, wanting to put everything on Eddie Lacy's shoulders because he was still struggling with some injuries there early on. And you got a true freshman in T.J. Yeldon who had some, you know, at critical times in both the LSU and A&M games put the ball on the ground. So it was really, I don't know, I think it was really a fact that, you know, we trusted McCarron most, I suppose, to not screw up. And we put everything on his shoulders. And, you know, for the most part it worked, but it was a very finesse thing. We were very stagnant and very predictable. And once we got to that second half of the SEC championship game, though, I think we really kind of settled down and decided, you know, this is our identity. We have a monster offensive line. We have a couple of great running backs. Let's just pound the ball. And, you know, Saban has talked a lot about, you know, finding your identity as a team. And for so long, our identity as a team has been a team of dominant defense. Well, we just didn't have that this year. And not to say that this isn't a, you know, an incredibly good defense, but they weren't that dominant defense like you saw in 09 or even 11 that just would completely shut down teams. They were going to give up points. They were going to give up drives. They weren't going to do it a lot. I think, you know, A&M got those three quick scores. But for the rest of the game, you know, we did pretty well on defense. And even against Georgia, when we needed a stop, we could get it. But they're just not those dominant lockdown defense like we've seen the last couple of years. And in that case, you've got to have an offense that can, you know, that can outshoot somebody. And we're not talking, you know, Pac-12 or Big 12, you know, 60 to 50 kind of games. You know, if you can get to, you know, if you can score four touchdowns, you ought to be able to win with this defense. And unfortunately, there were some times that we couldn't do that. Well, one time that we couldn't do that. But, I think really finding that offensive identity at the end of the year, it was kind of a sea change, or you can say a watershed moment, of the coaching staff saying, like, look, you know, this is, we've built our reputation on defense here, but we haven't been recruiting, you know, these great offensive linemen and these running backs and smart players to be stagnant on offense, so let's play to our strength here. And that's something that, even though we're not going to be, you know, a team that brings in, you know, an air raid coordinator to completely overhaul the system or anything, the fact that we got very aggressive on offense in the second half of the SEC championship game and against Notre Dame, which, you know, I was very impressed that we were still throwing for the end zone late in a blowout. That kind of aggressive play calling is a shift from the very efficient play calling, I should say. And I like it. I think that that's something that is going to have to maintain going forward here, because, you know, if you look around the SEC, you've got obviously Texas A&M with Sumlin and his offense. You've got Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss, and, you know, let's face it, Ole Miss is, you know, they are on the ascendancy right now. They have, you know, they're recruiting well. He has a good offensive system, and they're going to be, you know, I don't think they're necessarily going to start being, you know, one of the top teams in the conference, but they are, you know, they're not a pushover anymore, and they're going to be consistent bowl teams and consistent team that is going to start beating teams that they shouldn't. You know, Gus Malzahn's back at Auburn, so that's three teams in our own division we're going to be playing every year that, you know, there's going to be games where you're just going to have to keep pace with them offensively while the defense settles in, makes adjustments. And, you know, again, we're not going to bring in somebody to overhaul the offense and install the air raid or you know, some spread option or whatever. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. But I think that, again, that kind of shift in philosophy from being merely efficient to being very aggressive, that's something that's going to have to go forward with us. And I was glad to see us doing it those last couple of games. I really hope it carries over into the next season. And again, you know, I've said this before several times, I really do believe that this is the offense that Saban has envisioned ever since he got here. You know, we're not going out and recruiting elite quarterbacks and, you know, superstar wide receivers so that we can hand the ball off and have them run block all the time. You know, again, I think we want to be explosive in the offense, but I don't think that we want to have to be explosive in the offense, I should put it that way, because that's why we're still, you know, recruiting five-star running backs too. We don't want them pass blocking all the time. We want them pounding the ball. So it's kind of a, you know, it's a real fine line. It's a balancing act there. And I think even a big portion of that was until late in the season, we weren't really challenged to have to be explosive on offense. If you look at all those games, you know, we pretty much controlled the game very early on and then could just sit back and play defense. You know, put Blake Sims and have him run the read option. And we didn't have to be explosive, I guess. So, you know, again, it's a fine line that you have to walk there. It's a balancing act between, you know, you don't want to be a jerk that's running up 70 on overmatched teams, but at the same time, you know, when you get in those games where you need your offense to function like that, well, they haven't had to all year. So it's a fine line. Speaking of Blake Sims, another kind of thing that I've been thinking about here, you know, with the early enrollees, you know, you've got Cooper Bateman and Jack Del Rio, and that kid from Georgia whose name I can't think of right now, you know, all early enrollees. And when we go into spring practice, we're going to have, let's see, what, six scholarship quarterbacks and a preferred walk-on in Del Rio. And that's, you know, that's really interesting to me. You know, obviously A.J. McCarron's the guy. We're going to continue to build things around him next year. But in the post-McCarron world, you really kind of have to wonder about the shape of the quarterback rotation. You know, obviously some guys are going to transfer to get playing time. I don't think that's a shock to anybody. But, you know, it seems like we're preparing for a post-McCarron offense. You know, last year went pretty hard after both Gunnar Kuehl and Zach Mettenberger. This year signed Cooper Bateman, who's a top guy. I think we were pretty, Alec Morris wasn't really a top guy when we signed him, but it seemed like, Saban and Nussmeier were pretty excited. Even Jim McElwain, while he was still here, were pretty excited about him. I think they consider him to be kind of a diamond in the rough. But where does Blake Sims fit into this? And I think, you know, the fact that he's been a team player, the fact that he's, you know, obviously been very selfless, run the scout team, and, you know, has just kind of come in and played mop-up, flipped back and forth between quarterback and running back, and just really done what the coaches have told him, you know, that's the kind of guys that get rewarded. You know, Saban has been very, vocal. You know, guys that do things the right way, they're going to get rewarded for that. And I don't know if he's going to be a starting quarterback ever, but, you know, he does have a good arm, and he does know the offense, and he does give you, a change of pace with him being a good running quarterback. And I would not be shocked if in 2014 we didn't see maybe him not starting, but if there's nobody that they really feel gives you the kind of consistent presence that McCarron did as a leader, I would not be surprised to see Blake Sims, you know, if he works on his passing and they really, you know, they keep him at quarterback and really focus on developing him as a quarterback, I would not be surprised to see him getting some significant a role in the offense as a senior. That would not shock me at all. It's something that I'd like to see. Again, you know, we don't have a Wildcat package, and we actually have a Wildcat quarterback right now. You know, we've kind of run some Wildcat with him running the read option, but even then, that's a gimmicky, not really a gimmicky thing, but it's just, you know, a run out the clock kind of thing in blowouts. But I would not be surprised to see if that, if we really want to be aggressive and be multiple on offense, see him playing that role. Let's see. Next, moving forward, I think one of the things or one of the themes of this season is really just kind of how young this team was and how, you know, you've got guys like TJ Yeldon and Amari Cooper stepping up, and that, you know, that's fantastic. It's great that you can, you know, get, you know, true freshmen to contribute early the way that they did. But, you know, the truth is those guys enrolled early. And you can also look at Chris Black, who unfortunately was injured and redshirted this year, but we were talking about burning his redshirt for two games, the SEC championship game and the BCS game. So you get those, we've got nine early enrollees now with guys like O.J. Howard and Derrick Henry and, a lot of guys that, you know, I think are going to be expected to come in and contribute right away. And that's usually a knock on a team, like, well, they're really young this year. But, you know, look at us in 2012, that was supposed to be a rebuilding year where we were going to be young, and we still, you know, only lost one game, won the BCS. And I think you have to give credit to Saban and his staff, not just for their coaching and the way they develop players. But I think, you know, you really kind of have to start crediting the staff on the way that they evaluate players as they're recruiting them. You know, there's a reason that a lot of guys that we offer are people that we have had in camp at Alabama. When you want to see them in person. You want to see if they're coachable. You want to see how they get along with their teammates. You know, you want to see if they're eager to learn and get better every day. And the fact that you see that in T.J. Yeldon, you see that in Amari Cooper, that's a big reason that they were able to play such significant roles early. It wasn't just enrolling early, though that obviously helps. But I think that by evaluating them and not just seeing, you know, good athletes, but seeing players and guys that just as people are ready to come in and work hard and contribute, that's how you find that out. And I think if you haven't read, there's a great interview with Scott Cochran about being a strength coach and, you know, talking about guys that really, you know, push it in the weight room and how, you know, they have to stop. You know, they have to put limits on guys like Jesse Williams and Trent Richardson because, you know, they could do more, but they're just for safety reasons, they don't want them doing more. And he singled out AJ or TJ Yeldon, Amari Cooper, and Landon Collins, who didn't really get a lot of playing time outside of special teams, but is another guy that will probably be coming on this season and contributing at safety. When you hear about that from true freshmen, that, you know, you have to put limits on them in the weight room. You have to, you know, they're there before you are in the morning, and you have to, you know, kind of keep an eye on them, make sure they don't go too hard. That's why we're so good. I mean, that's why it, you know, that's why it's a dynasty. That's why we just, you know, plug new guys in. And I think the more, you know, critical mass of guys like that that you have, it's just impressive. I think that's really where Nick Saban and his staff are really doing a great job of recruiting. It's not about just getting guys with the great measurables. You know, if that were the case, Miami would still be a power. Oklahoma and Notre Dame and all these teams that, you know, they're constantly at the top of the recruiting rankings and yet still can't seem to get over that hump. It's not about getting the measurables. It's about getting the right guys. And this staff just, I'm blown away by the fact that they can continually do such a great job of evaluating players and bringing in the right players for the system. So, you know, hats off to them. I think, you know, it was just from disregard the X's and O's and then the in-game coaching, it all starts right there. And that's why they are probably, to, at least in my eyes, the best staff in the country. Let's see, what else do we want to talk about? Going forward, you know, it's really kind of funny, this whole dynasty thing. You know, a lot of people obviously wanted to see the SEC's run of BCS titles end this year. A lot of people hyped up Notre Dame, you know, and I think a lot of it was guys that, you know, you heard a lot about after the game, about a lot of, you know, coaches that had played against Notre Dame and had seen, you watched film on them and whatever, you know, media members that were former coaches and players that had watched a lot of film were not surprised by that just route. Because, you know, if you put it on, it's not necessarily that Notre Dame's a bad team. They're not. They're very, you know, they're a physical and fundamentally sound team, but they're not a particularly complex team either. You know, we pretty much had our way with them with our offense, and a lot of it was just the fact that they couldn't get pressure on AJ. They didn't really bring a lot of the crazy blitzes like you see from SEC defenses, and they played a pretty soft zone behind the front seven, and so we just, you know, one cut and our receivers are open. It was just as easy as could be. You know, people weren't surprised by that, but I don't know where I was going with this. our charmingly half-assed way of doing things at Roll Bama Roll is biting me in the butt right now. But anyway, where I was going with that, if you look at going forward with this whole dynasty thing, you know, a lot of the, you know, we want to see the SEC's run end. We don't want to see Alabama win again. A lot of that was just, you know, it was the fatigue. And think back, you know, obviously it's great for us, but think back when you know, USC was on that great run under Pete Carroll, and everybody was so, you know, whew, thank goodness for Texas and Vince Young. Because, you know, in the month leading up to that game, you know, ESPN was having specials about how that Trojans team was the greatest team to ever play college football. And you were pretty tired of it. I know that I was. You know, you had that USC fatigue, so I totally understand why everybody's tired of that. But when it comes down to it, it's not like this was Alabama and Nick Saban's, you know, last chance to get a national title or something. You know, it really was. This was, like you said, a rebuilding year. And if you look at the schedule next year, it shapes right up for another run. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing, but everything is just lined up perfectly for Alabama to go on another run again. You know, obviously Virginia Tech is very down right now. They've just hired a new offensive coordinator in Scott Loeffler, who you may remember as the the head of this season's Auburn offensive debacle, and which, you know, you kind of feel bad for the guy. His last job at Auburn was to coach against Alabama, and his first job at Virginia Tech will be to coach against Alabama too. So, you know, you feel bad for the guy as much as you can for somebody on the opposite sidelines. But, you know, Virginia Tech is very down. Then you get a bye week, and we get Texas A&M early in the season. And, you know, two factors. One, revenge games are Nick Saban's specialties. And two, the fact that we get them early in the season I think is going to be huge because, you know, we got them after LSU, which is a very physical, very emotional game. And I'm of the very firm belief that the reason the Mississippi State games every year have always been a little nerve-wracking and pretty close is that, you know, once you, you know, one, A, obviously LSU is physical. You're beat up and you're tired, and then you got to go out and play again, and very emotional, and you just can't get up for, you know, well, 12 games now. You just can't get up for 12 games on the schedule. They're not all as big and important as LSU or as big and important as Auburn and Tennessee. And, you know, it's Mississippi State. You just don't get up for every game like that. And by getting Texas A&M the week after LSU, and especially the way we won at LSU, I think that played a huge part into just kind of coming out flat the way we did. So getting them early in the season, the second game of the season, is going to be huge. And I think we have a very good chance there. And then, really, there's nothing left on the schedule but LSU. You know, Arkansas is changing their coaching. They're going to a completely different system, which I think Brett Bielema was a great hire for them. And I think that series is going to go back to being a very competitive, you know, very tough physical game, because he is a smash-mouth guy. He's not a Bobby Petrino, you know, finesse offense, don't play defense kind of guy. So that's going to go back to being, you know, a very good early season test for Alabama. But, you know, outside of that, Auburn's going through a new coaching change. You know, Ole Miss, I think Ole Miss is probably going to be the biggest challenge between Texas A&M and LSU. So it'll be just a matter of, you know, if everybody can keep their heads on straight and, you know, really keep focused, this team actually has a better chance of making it to the national title game than the 2012 team. So we're just set up for another run. And that's, you know, as long as Nick Saban's there, it's going to be – it's not like there's going to be a last chance. This isn't our last hurrah to get there. So I'm pretty impressed by that. But also, you know, guys, just enjoy this while you can. Let's see. Moving on a little more. You know, I mentioned Brett Bielema at Arkansas, and you know, a lot of the Kevin Sumlin at A&M and Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss and et cetera. But you know, it's really interesting the kind of change that we're seeing in the SEC. Obviously, football is cyclical. You're going to see, you know, guys going from ground and pound and defense to running, you know, the fun and gun or whatever with Spurrier. And it just goes about like that. And we're back in that kind of thing where, you know, teams are very much, you know, trying to adopt that Big 12 kind of philosophy of being very potent on offense. And I really do believe a lot of it is built around the fact that you do have Nick Saban at Alabama and Les Miles and John Chavis at LSU, very good defensive teams. I always said it was kind of maybe some karmic justice that Bobby Petrino wound up, not just in the conference, but in the division of the two teams that are most suited and built to stop what he does. But, you know, if you even look across into the Eastern Division, you've got Will Muschamp at Florida, and obviously South Carolina has been very good defensively as well, and Todd Grantham. Georgia is kind of turning that defense into one that, you know, Georgia fans can actually be proud of again. So it's a very strong defensive league. But the thing is, you know, as a lot of teams have proven, if you're going to beat teams like that with defenses like that, you have to run systems like Hugh Freeze and Kevin Sumlin are running, like Gus Malzahn is running. And, you know, they're very traditional defenses. So I'm curious to see how the defenses evolve. I think, you know, the way we've used Adrian Hubbard this season is a preview of that. He was a Jack linebacker, kind of a backup to Courtney Upshaw, and it seemed like we had plans to have him be, you know, that kind of down lineman hybrid guy, but instead we moved him out to Sam and utilized Xavier Dixon instead. And by having him, you know, being a big physical guy, but also someone that can move in space and stand up as a linebacker, I think that's a preview of that, where we really want to start developing those versatile outside linebackers that can be a jack of all trades, that can rush the passer, but truth be told, are really more a traditional outside linebacker in the way that they're utilized. And we recruited I can't think of his name. Williams out of LSU, or out of Louisiana, actually out of LSU. his high school is on the campus of LSU, so that's a pretty good pull. But, you know, he made mention that that's the role that we have envisioned for him as well, to be a real hybrid outside linebacker. So that's going to be interesting to see over the next few seasons, the way defenses evolve to counter these offenses, because, you know, You can be a dominant offense against a pro-style defense, but when you start running, you know, a lot of spread stuff, a lot of mobile quarterback stuff, that's always been the Achilles heel of this defense. You look, even going back to the Sugar Bowl against Utah, which was really, you know, reminded that Texas A&M game reminded me a lot about that. A team, you know, jumped out to a real quick lead and then was able to hang on. And that's, you know, that's kind of the recipe for success against the Saban defense, is if you can get a couple of good cheap scores. Well, I don't want to say cheap, but, you know, get a couple of good quick scores against the defense before they settle in, you have a good chance of beating this team. So it'll be interesting to see how the defenses evolve. Let's see. What else did I want to talk about? Like I said, I'm just kind of rambling at this point. Injuries is something. You know, Jostin Fowler and Dee Hart, I think you can't really express the – maybe the level or the impact that those injuries had. Like I said, you know, we were down to Eddie Lacy and T.J. Yeldon. And Lacy was injured, and T.J. Yeldon is a true freshman. And speaking of Eddie Lacy, I just want to say that the last couple of games that he played, I think were probably the first games of his career that we saw him at 100%. And he was just absolutely impressive. I really wish that we could keep him for another year. I understand why he's going to the NFL draft. I doubt he'll be a first rounder. I hope he is. Honestly, I hope Pittsburgh takes him. As a Steelers fan, I would very much love to see us invest in a guy that can be a feature running back. But, you know, truth be told, next season he's going to be running behind a rebuilt offensive line. He's going to be splitting even more carries with T.J. Yeldon. You get Dee Hart back, and you also have, you know, Kenyon Drake, Derrick Henry, a lot of those guys coming in. So I think it's – you know, it's the smart move to get out while the getting's good before, you know, next season you have diminished carries behind a rebuilt offensive line. But, you know, again, those last two games are probably the first time that we really saw him at 100%, other than, you know, we saw him in mop-up time in his true freshman year. But for at 100% as the feature back, I was just very impressed and blown away with what he was able to accomplish against Georgia and Notre Dame. Great, you know, great running back, has been a great kid. I wish him all the best. I really wish he could come back for another year. I'd just love to see him run some more in an Alabama jersey. But, you know, best of luck to him. Anyway, going back to the injuries, having Jostin Fowler and Dee Hart come back is really it's kind of an interesting proposition. It'll be interesting to see how they're used in the backfield. You know, T.J. Yeldon will be, you know, he'll be penciled in right now, probably inked in right now as the presumptive starter. But if Fowler and Hart come back at 100%, you really wonder about what they'll be utilized as. I think from what limited duty we got to see Dee Hart in, he, you know, he does not fit the mold of the Alabama running back. He is, you know, a very small guy, but he is a powerful running back. If you really look at him and watch, you know, when he makes contact, he keeps his legs moving. He's very, you know, obviously a small guy, low center of gravity, but he's a physical runner for his size. So, you know, I think there's definitely a role in there for him, not just being, you know, a special teams guy or a pass catcher. And then obviously Jostin Fowler, I think, you know, I really do believe that we had a significant role built around him at H-back. I would love to have seen what we could have done with it, really. And next year, with him and with Brent Callaway working as an H-back, love to see what we could do with them. That's a really tantalizing prospect of a guys that can run the ball, that can lead block, that are good pass catchers, good matchup nightmares for linebackers. So having those guys back. But then, you know, you've got Kenyon Drake, you've got Derrick Henry, you've got LT Tenpenny. We've got you know, so many running backs that are going to be young. It'll be really interesting to see how that shakes out. But right now, if I had to guess, I would think, you know, you got T.J. Yeldon, you got Kenyon Drake will be your top two. But you see Hart and Fowler, I don't know what their role is going to be, but I'm pretty excited to see what they can do. Just with those injuries, could you imagine what kind of offense we could have had going had they stayed healthy? I think we would have probably not been in such dire consequences against LSU and Texas A&M had we had them. Let's see, Barrett Jones. I think we all need to just stop for a minute and be very thankful that he played for Alabama. You know, great quality guy, very versatile guy, very team player kind of guy. And it's easy to want to sell some kind of narrative about him being an overlooked player or whatever, but he wasn't. He was a four-star prospect as a guard. You know, he had offers from a lot of, you know, several other SEC teams. He could have gone to some other great schools, but, you know, truth be told, when he kind of came out of nowhere and picked up the right guard spot there in 09, it shocked a lot of people. But you don't often find guys that can play right guard, move out, you know, at the spur of the moment, honestly, at the end of spring practice to left tackle, and then come back and play at center. I mean, this is just a phenomenal athlete, very smart, phenomenal offensive lineman that's not maybe – Chance Wormack obviously is a far more gifted athlete than he is, but at the same time, just someone that can play that technically sound and can perform at such a high level just really by being smart. He's just – I don't think you can say enough good things about Barrett Jones, so we should all be very thankful that we got to watch him play at Alabama. He's he definitely represented the team and the school well, and, hats off to him. Let's see. Sleepers moving forward, a couple guys that we really need to keep our eye on for next season. First, Geno Smith, true freshman cornerback, got on the field as the star or the nickelback the last couple of games. And I think, he's a guy that Saban had mentioned, somebody that the light had kind of come on for him there by the end of the season. And again, true freshman, I think it's a big deal that we were able to develop roles for true freshmen and not just, have to throw them out there because we don't have any other fresh bodies to throw out there, but get them out there because they've learned and they've been, they're coachable and they're willing to learn. And we had the ability to put them out there. So he's a guy that I think moving forward with D. Milner going into the NFL draft early, the corner position is, again, kind of shaky. It was shaky at the start of the season. You had D. Milner and you had Ballou. And outside of that, John Fulton is still trying to find his way in. I think he'll be much improved next season. But, when we're using Vinny Sinceri at star, and that was a weakness. We don't need safeties trying to cover wide receivers in the slot, and that was a weakness that was exposed. And I think, having Geno Smith play well against Georgia and against Notre Dame was a big reason that the defense looked better. But definitely I think you're going to see him next season. I think obviously the odds are that Fulton and Ballou will be your starting cornerbacks, but look for Geno Smith to be kind of that D. Milner, kind of that Marquise Johnson guy that's a good third corner and really brings a lot of value there. I think Brandon Ivory, we've had a lot of I won't say a lot. We've had two, real characters, I guess you could say, at the nose guard position. Terrence Cody, who was a folk hero before he even played a down, and Jesse Williams, the Australian dude with the mohawk. It's kind of guys that, it's easy to sit there and act like, oh, well, what are we going to do about nose guard? But then you think back to Josh Chapman, who was not a character like Cody and Williams, but it was a very solid nose guard. And I think Brandon Ivory is going to step in and kind of be that guy. He's not going to be anybody that's flashy, but, behind Williams, I think if he could stay healthy, and he'll have a very productive year at nose guard there. We should not have a real drop-off there like you would expect just from losing someone with as big a personality as you see in Jesse Williams. Someone asked me on Twitter if I thought the nose guard fullback is going to continue on. I don't know. I think, that's kind of one of those things where it's fun to see Terrence Cody and it's fun to see Jesse Williams trot out there on offense and kind of plow the way. But at the same time, it is a kind of a gimmicky thing and it's fun for the players. It's a psychological thing. It's fun for your players. You want the running back to see that big dude clearing the way. And it's a psychological thing for the defense as well. You don't want to see that big dude plowing the way. But truth be told, if it was, more effective to have your nose guard lead blocking on the goal line or in short yardage as it was to just have, a fullback or a tight end, every team would have that package. And if you'll notice, when we were using Terrence Cody, we didn't really have – a good, true, solid fullback when we were doing that. And you notice we didn't start using Williams in that role until Jalston Fowler was hurt. And if you also go back, Terrence Cody, when he was in junior college, had played that role, had actually played the role of a running back and carried the ball several times. I genuinely wish that we had let him or even Williams score a touchdown in some way. But, Cody had experience in that role. So did Jesse Williams as a rugby player. So you look at those, and it kind of makes sense that you use them. But next year, if we don't, if Jalston Fowler's back or if we can develop one of the tight ends to use in that role, you don't need that nose guard package. If you need it, you use it. But for the most part, you don't need to get cute with personnel groupings, especially in situations like goal line, short yardage. Don't get cute with personnel groupings just because you want to. So I don't know if that'll continue on or not. It'll be dependent on if we can develop a legitimate fullback option. Let's see, what else do we want to talk about? Okay, the staff. Kirby Smart going to Auburn. And actually now, tonight as I'm recording this, there's been a couple rumors on Twitter that Kirby Smart might be interviewing for the Philadelphia Eagles defensive coordinator job with Chip Kelly. And, I think we all have at this point decided that we're probably not going to keep him. I personally think that we have some sort of under the table deal where he's kind of has a handshake agreement to be the head coach in waiting. But he did interview with Southern Miss last year, interviewed with Auburn, and for the most part was considered the leading candidate this year. And should he interview with the NFL, it might be a good career move for him. I don't know. I certainly wish him the best, but this is a guy that we put a premium on keeping him. Every year that there's been overtures about, Georgia wanted to hire him, Auburn this year or whatever, we've done what it takes to keep him here. So I think, he's certainly a very valuable member of the staff. Should he move on, best of luck to him. He's done a phenomenal job here. You can't thank him enough. But hopefully we can keep him around. But I think as far as the staff goes, the staff is intact. We lost our secondary coach but brought somebody in. No big deal. That's happened several times now. But for the most part, we've kept the staff intact, and that's going back to being, a good recruiter. I think that's something that you have to give Nick Saban credit for, is to be able to keep your staff mostly intact. When guys move on, bring in guys that can fill those shoes. With the staff intact moving forward, if Kirby Smart stays in again, that's the dynasty. Let's see. I think that's really all that I had been musing on. Let me look at my notepad here. That's really just kind of my final thoughts on the season. It's a great time to be an Alabama fan. This is certainly a golden age, and it should, as long as Saban is there and as long as you can keep players focused. And I think that's kind of the, again, I know Paul wrote his, or outside the sidelines, OTS, whatever you want to call him, made a very valid point yesterday in his state of the program. Notice that the biggest challenge moving forward is keeping guys focused and not having a spoiled, entitled attitude. And again, I think that by evaluating players and bringing in guys that want to learn and want to get better and are coachable and want to win, that's one of the things I think has ultimately brought down these other teams that, Miami and Southern Cal and Texas, Oklahoma, whatever, all these teams, they get that spoiled, entitled attitude. And if, the easiest and best way to not get that spoiled and entitled attitude is to just not go after these five-star dudes like a Bryce Brown or whatever that have handlers and, we're trying to be rock stars on the recruiting circuit. Get those guys that want to go ahead and get their offer, want to go ahead and commit, want to enroll early, and, go ahead and get them on board. If you don't bring in spoiled, entitled people, then you don't have to worry about bringing a spoiled, entitled team onto the field. So, again, the ability of this the staff to evaluate players and bring in the right people, I think, is what's really going to be the key on not having that problem. So, I guess I'll just hang it up here. Enjoy it, guys. I don't know. I'm not sure about the future of Roll Bama Roll. It's been a lot of fun. We've had a lot of great opportunities with Yay Alabama and getting to go the Nike thing in New York and doing radio and stuff. But I think really mostly, not to be sappy, but the coolest thing about Roll Bama Roll is getting to meet and befriend a lot of really great people, and not just online. I've met several people in real life that have become friends just because of the blog. And that's really, when we started it, that was really the kind of thing that we wanted to do. Joel obviously started, or Nico. Well, his name is Joel Gamble. He's published. But when he started it and asked me on board, there just really wasn't that kind of online community for Alabama fans. There were the message boards and a lot of the you know, not particularly people that you would really want to talk with a lot. And I think that's one of the things I'm certainly proudest of and happiest of, is that we really, you know, we created the Alabama blog that we would want to read. And we created the Alabama community that we would want to be a part of. And, you know, we certainly have had our issues with some people and, you know, whatever. But, you know, for the most part, it's been a very enjoyable and pleasurable experience getting to know a lot of y'all online and in real life. And I'm very grateful for that. And, you know, certainly I'll be whatever goes on with Roll Bama Roll, I'll sure be sure to stop by and chat with y'all in the comments. And obviously we'll be on Twitter. So I've enjoyed it. It's been, you know, it's been great, and it's certainly been a great time to be an Alabama blogger. So thanks, everybody, and Roll Tide.